many of you have ever referred to your spouse or your partner as your better half? Some of us didn't. But a lot of us do. It's a very common term. It's a phrase that we hear often. I've had lots of people introduce their other half, their spouse, to me as, "This is my better half, you know, so and so." And if you think about the term, my better half, a couple things are implied. First of all, as you think about my better half, that half portion implies a really, really close relationship, does it not? It's part of me, my better half. I mean, it is extremely close, intimate. You know, when we're a spouse, in a spousal relationship, it's as close as you can get. So my better half infers that it's just this really, really close relationship. And the other part of it is better, you know? Then that infers that there's something beneficial to the relationship. And maybe that's why some of you didn't raise your hands. I'm not sure. But my better half is this part of me that I consider my better half. But what about those of us who aren't married? Or those of us who didn't raise our hands What if we don't feel that way about our spouse? What then? What if I told you that each and every one of us has a better half? A better half that loves you unconditionally. A better half that wants the very best for you and will do everything possible to make those dreams come true. Would you believe me if I told you that you do? Of course you do. Of course you will. In Unity here, we know that I'm referring to our second basic principle. You know, our first principle is that there is just one God. God is the all-powerful presence in the universe. That's all there is this power is God. And our second principle says that we are children of God, that each of us has that divine spark within us, that we each have some of that divinity within. And we refer to that part of ourselves, sometimes as our higher self, sometimes as the divinity within, sometimes as the Christ within. So there is that piece of us that we consider our better half. If you believe that, as a Unity Truth student, that there is a better half, that there is that part of us that is divine, that presence within us, then why are our lives not perfect? If we have a better half, one who is constantly present, one who would do anything and everything to make our dreams, make our dreams come true, then why isn't it happening? To begin to answer that question, one of the things that I looked at was a passage in Romans that has always just spoken to me because it speaks to the human condition, in my opinion. This is from Romans 7. Paul was writing, and what he says is, "I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." Another verse down. "But in fact, it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwells within me." Now, the thing that always has spoken to me about that is that it seems to be true for me that sometimes I don't do what I want to do. And for me, luckily, it's has to do with my health. You know, I know I want to exercise more than I do. I know that I want to eat better than I do. You know, it's not usually anything that's, you'll be glad to know, that's illegal or immoral. But we do the things we do not want to do. And then if we look at that last part then, it is not I but the sin that dwells in me. Now that sounds heavy, doesn't it? It sounds like, oh my gosh, more of that worthless being part of us. But I don't believe that part. If we look at what sin means according to Charles Fillmore, in The Revealing Word, he says that sin is missing the mark. In fact, this word in the original text really is, I've been told, an archery term, just missing the mark. Well, that's not as heavy as sin. It is wrong thinking or error thought. So if it is not I, but it is error thought, it is error thinking, I can get my mind around that. I can accept that a little bit more because I know that happens. Do you think it's wrong to eat concretes? I don't either. I think that ice cream ought to be a basic food group, personally. I absolutely love ice cream. I love concretes. It's the thinking around it, the wrong thinking, that gets me in trouble. When I think that I deserve a concrete because I've been working hard or, you know, something like that, it puts that ice cream into a category now of either punishment or reward. I've got emotional baggage around ice cream that doesn't need to be there. If I want to eat ice cream, it's a wonderful taste. I love ice cream. When I put the emotional baggage on it, then that clouds my ability to reason, to think, if I eat another concrete, I'm going to have to go to the next size. We our thinking gets us in trouble. It's pretty well known that a lot of us eat for emotional reasons, as comfort food, as like I say, this reward punishment. But it's the thinking that makes it wrong, that makes it missing the mark, not that particular thing by itself. And it doesn't even have to be food. Another example might be saying you're sorry. In a relationship, it's pretty common, it's pretty normal, in fact, to have disagreements, little spats. And if we take the position that I'm not saying I'm sorry, Jim, if we get to that place, then that's wrongful thinking. If we can step back from the hurt or whatever the emotional stuff is that is around that, if we can step back and think, now wait a minute, what is the most important thing about this? This relationship is very important to me. I love this person. This is the person I love the most in the world. Then wouldn't it be important to me to be able to understand what that person is thinking and feel, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the rational part can kick in when we don't have the emotional, the wrong thinking that has taken over. Calling a friend to say you're sorry, or to find out why they're upset, or if you've had your feelings hurt, calling a friend to begin to talk about that. All of those things might be ways that we can hit the mark. We can be the kind of person that we want to be in little ways. And I'm, you know, of course, then the bigger things kind of speak for themselves. There is one error thought, one wrong way of thinking, I think, that keeps us where Paul talks about, you know, doing what I do not want to do, and that is that the error thought that we are separate from God. We forget that God is everywhere present. God is our constant companion. And when we forget, we feel like we're all by ourselves. We feel isolated. We feel like there's nobody on our side sometimes. If we feel like we have to do everything on our own, it can be overwhelming. So that thinking of separation is an error thought, I think, that gets us in trouble. When we consider what Jesus taught, what Jesus says, we see obviously that Jesus fully realized oneness with that better half, with that higher self. Jesus was constantly referring to the Father. He scolded someone. You remember there was one time when someone called him good, you know, oh master, you know, something or other. And Jesus scolded him and said, it's not me, it's the Father. So he didn't take any credit himself for what was happening. He always talked about the glory of God, this, the Father, and he referred many, many times to the Father. But when you see me, you're seeing the Father. Jesus lived it, he taught it, and he believed it. In the Gospel of John, there are many, many occasions where Jesus uses the I am statement. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the vine. I am the light. Now, some traditions use that as evidence of there just being one child of God. But in unity, we look at it a little differently. We know that in Exodus, God has answered that when asked, when Moses says, "Who shall I say sent me?" God answered, "Say, I am that I am sent you." So in unity, we try to be very careful with our use of I am. If I say, I am happy, if I am prosperous, I am healthy, I am wise, we are using that power of that I am, that connection, in a very positive way. Likewise, there's power in that. And if I say, I am sick, I am tired, cancel. All of those kinds of things, there's power in that too. And we will become more of what we say, I am. Jesus used, knew, and believed, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And he spoke from that connection, that oneness. I think, in one place, I think in John, he says that I and the Father are one. And I think that what he was doing was not, he was modeling what we are to try to do and be. We are to try to model being our higher selves, being the best that we can be. And the reason, one of the reasons I think that speaks, is spoken to in another scripture. It is John 14:12, another one that is one of my favorites. And in here it says, "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father." The one who believes in me will do these works and greater works. There is great hope and excitement in that statement, I believe. When we believe in Jesus, the Christ, we know and believe that he fully attained this perfection, this wholeness, and we all have that potential. That's what he's telling us. We can do it too. We saw it. Jesus was a great teacher. And he modeled this, and he taught the disciples. And in fact, when he was gone, then they went out and did the works that he did also. They did the same. If it was true 2,000 years ago, it can be true today. So when we know God, our better half, is always with us, is available for guidance, is available for wisdom, we too can easily be able to do the things in our lives that we want to be able to do. How are we going to do this? Well, first of all, we need to remember. And so we need to remind ourselves always that my better half is here. God and I are one. Whatever phrase works for you the best, God is within. God and I are one. So if we remember that, we'll have a deep, constant connection. You know, I talked about the implications of that phrase, the better half, and a part of myself. When we think about God as our better half, we'll know that, I mean, at a very, very deep level. Second, we'll want to have a regular connection with God that comes through prayer and meditation. And what happens when we do that, when we set time aside, and hopefully every day, but on a regular basis, we sit still, we turn within, and we listen, we rest in that presence. It's like we're plugged into an outlet of power. God is our source, And in that connection, we find and connect to that source of all good. And then finally, we pay attention. If we remember our better half, if we have plugged ourselves in with prayer and meditation, then we rest and wait. Because then we can begin to see and feel the things that happen. For some of us, perhaps we'll get dreams that will give us guidance. Some of us get ideas, divine ideas that come to us. Eric Butterworth, I think it is, says that God's currency is ideas. It isn't, if you need $5,000 for something, you may not find a bundle of $1,000 bills on your porch, but you might get an idea that comes to you that will allow you to have the $5,000. So you might get the dreams, you might get the ideas, you know, someone might say just the answer to a question you were asking. The synchronicities also begin to emerge. So the third and final piece is to listen, to be receptive, to be willing. I want to share with you something that I've found very powerful. This is from Marianne Williamson in her book, A Return to Love. This portion has been quoted. Nelson Mandela, in fact, used it in one of his speeches. But I think it speaks to our ability to be powerful. And why aren't we? She says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. We are powerful beyond measure. So I'd like for you to use your imagination just for a moment. I would like for you to imagine that every waking second, you're aware of that presence of God within you. Every waking second. Because of that awareness, you are attuned to God's guidance, to God's wisdom, and you completely trust that with God, all things are possible. In that connection, you embody peace, you embody love. You move in this world, but you are not of this world. You enjoy the physical, and you have all you need, but you don't make those things, as it said, the object of your existence. You know that God is in you, and you are in God. You notice that your life is becoming better, more fulfilling, more rewarding. You notice that your thinking is becoming more clear. You notice that your emotions are becoming more stable. You notice that you are doing the things that you want, that you have the things that you want. Your life is improving. What's happening? You have become more aware of, you are knowing, and you are appreciating your better half. Now let's take this opportunity to practice this relationship. So to prepare for this connection, let's become still and remember the truth that we know about God. We do know that God is everywhere present. God is love. Every week, in fact, we affirm this truth. There is only one presence, one power in the universe and at work in our lives. God, the good, omnipotent. And won't you affirm that with me? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God the good, omnipotent. And so it is.